This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place, and this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Yahoo Sports. She covers junior hockey, Sunaya Sapurji. Sunaya, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, of course, brought you on to talk some more about the World Juniors taking place in Toronto and Montreal over the past week to 10 days, entering into the semifinal portion of the tournament with the games going tomorrow evening, Canada, Slovakia, and, of course, the Swedes against the Russians. Sunaya, from your perspective right now, is this going to be a coronation for Canada winning the gold medal?
You know what? I don't know if it's going to be a coronation, but they've certainly had an easier run than I think most people expected, having to face Denmark in the quarterfinals, and now Slovakia, a team that they've already beaten 8-0 in the round robin in the semifinal. So it's looking good for Canada, but I think whoever they face in the final, either Sweden or Russia, if they are able to get past Slovakia, will definitely be a tough challenge.
If they're not able to get past Slovakia, I think we might have to talk to you immediately on Sunday evening.
There's probably going to be a big problem if they don't. But having said that, you know, Slovakia has improved quite a bit since the first game. And that was obviously the first game of the tournament for both teams. And, you know, I think Slovakia has definitely improved as they've progressed through the tournament. But Canada, I still think, should be able to handle them.
Yeah, Sunaya, it's looking pretty good right now for Canada. The margin is 29-4 as far as goals go in the first five games, and everyone expects it to be a fairly easy path to the gold medal game. But then some people look back at 2004 and the team in Finland that wasn't able to get to the gold medal game and win it, I should say, based on the fact that they were very dominant, and obviously they were dominant the next year. But I guess you're going to hear a question that's very cliche, and it's going to be asked to the players by guys on TSN and probably Benoit Grue as well. Is it a concern of yours that they haven't faced any serious adversity? I don't know, maybe a Robbie Fabry injuries adversity, but are you concerned with that at all?
You know what? I think a little bit. They haven't really been tested. I think outside of the game against the U.S., you know, they haven't really faced any kind of real opposition. They've never trailed. So, you know, I think if, you know, things start to go sideways, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. You know, but having said that, you know, they've got a very good leadership group on the team. You know, Curtis Lazar, obviously, with his experience with the Ottawa Senators. So, you know, I think they're in good shape. They've got 7 returning players from last year's team. So they know what it's like to lose, and I'm sure they definitely don't want to feel that again.
Sanaa, do you think that anything done by either Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel in this tournament changes their draft stock at all?
You know what, I don't think so. You know, I know that this is probably the first time a lot of people have had the opportunity to see Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel play, you know, in a tournament of this caliber. But when you think about the scouts who are seeing these guys, who have been watching these guys for more than a year now, you know, I don't think that something like a 10-day tournament is really going to change anyone's long-term perception of these two, you know, heading into June.
It's interesting to me because it seems like even this year it's been proven against, and it's kind of a 19-year-old tournament, yet the guys like McDavid and McKinnon, and as it goes on and goes on, they never actually play in the tournament when they are 19 to dominate at that level.
Well, yeah, that's the sad thing. Like, I don't think we'll be seeing Jack Eichel next year at the tournament. I'm almost positive we won't be seeing Connor McDavid at the tournament either. So, yeah, I guess you get to see them while you can, but it's a short time.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Our guest is Yahoo Sports writer Sunaya Sapurji discussing the World Junior Hockey Championships. Sunaya, from your perspective, is there sort of one under-the-radar player from Team Canada maybe hasn't received the headlines that, you know, we all know the big names. Is there somebody sort of under the radar that you've been impressed with that hasn't received the notoriety?
Yeah, you know what? I think there are two guys for me, and they're Braden Point and Jake Virtanen. I think both of them have played incredibly well. Braden Point, I've really been impressed with. You know, he came into the tournament as the 13th forward, and he's really done a good job being thrown into a number of different roles. You know, I didn't think he was as versatile as he has been, but he's been great. And Jake Virtanen, you know, for somebody who's only 18 years old, to come in and make the kind of difference he's made in terms of opening up room and space for guys like Connor McDavid and Curtis Lazar when he was on that line, I think he's done a great job.
So, you know, the game isn't until tomorrow night against Slovakia, the semifinal game, but I guess everyone is expecting Zach Vukeli to start. Is there any chance that we might see Winnipeg Jets prospect Eric Comrie in net, or are you expecting it to be Vukeli?
You know what? At this point, it's anyone's guess. Benoit Brou, you know, refuses to tip his hand beforehand, so I expect he'll be announcing the starter today at practice, which is in about an hour or so's time. But, you know, he's been very comfortable with both of them. They've gone back and forth. Zach, of course, started against Slovakia in the opener, but if you're going by the rotation the way it's worked thus far, it would be Comrie's start. So it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they finally make a decision on who the guy to take them through the rest of the tournament is, or whether or not they continue with the rotation.
So now, where did the responsibility fall? Like, you're covering obviously this tournament, you're close by the U.S. team here. Where does the responsibility fall for the loss to Russia when the expectations were so high for the United States?
You know what, I think in that situation, those penalties early on, they killed them. They really, they took the momentum away, and I think they were never really able to recover after that. And Russia is a very difficult team to play against because you really don't know what you're going to get with them. They're so inconsistent. You know, they had not a very good game against Denmark, of all countries, and then, you know, they come back in the quarterfinals and they beat the USA. So, you know, I think in that instance, it was just those penalties that really killed them.
Were the tournament officials or the people covering the tournament surprised at how, I mean, I was personally surprised at how well Russia protected the lead when they had it yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing about Russia. You never really know what you're going to get with them. They can come out gangbusters or they can just, you know, tank it. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play against Sweden. It's going to be interesting to see which Russia shows up.
Have you been able to talk to the coach?
No, we asked today if Valeri Bragin would be made available for interviews, and the PR guy looked at us like we were crazy. Yeah, he's not talkative even at the best of times, but he's not interested in talking to the media, which is what we expect from him. You know, he definitely does his own thing. I don't know if you saw him walking on the on the board during the game yesterday, but yeah, you know, he has his ways of doing things, and they seem to be working for Russia. He's got a pretty good record with that Russian junior team.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Sunaya Sapurji, Yahoo hockey writer, junior hockey writer, rather. Sunaya, I asked you about the most sort of unsung player on Team Canada. Who's been the most impressive player in the tournament, you know, that isn't one of the big names either on Canada or the U.S.? You know, from one of the other countries, who sort of jumped out at you as being most impressive?
Well, you know, obviously Jack Eichel is one guy who is, I guess, a big name, but who was really impressive, as was his teammate Dylan Larkin, who's a Detroit Red Wings prospect. But some of the lesser-known guys, I would have to say Mikko Rantanen from Finland. He's only 18 years old, and he's draft-eligible this year. And I was really impressed. You know, when you look at the Finnish team, some of the big names that they had on their team, he was the guy who was really leading them through the tournament. He was pretty much most of their offense through the tournament, such that it was. But he was a guy who really impressed me. You know, I think he's done a lot this week to help his draft stock and move up in the first round.
Sunai, we've got one last question for you here, and I don't mean to stir the pot, but, you know, it goes back to what we were saying previous segment. You know, we were talking about the World Junior Tournament, and, you know, there was some criticism that, well, I guess the skepticism that the games wouldn't sell out, and they haven't all sold out, but I guess the question is, I'll just get right to it instead of stumbling along here, but do you think it would be a mistake by Team Canada to not continue to have this tournament in small markets and only have it in Toronto and Montreal, because we've talked about how successful the 99 World Junior Tournament was here in Winnipeg, and some people don't think it's ever coming back here.
You know, and I think that that would be a real shame. If you look at the ticket price points, they're incredibly high for people who are used to paying junior hockey. You know, you can go and watch Connor McDavid play in Erie for $20. Right. I don't know why people would want to spend, you know, $120 to see him play against Slovakia or Germany. I think it's a shame because it's taking away your core market, which should be like people who are junior hockey fans. I know it's a big tournament that all of Canada supports, but you know, I think your lifeblood of junior hockey in general is the smaller market.
Sunaya Sapurji covers junior hockey for Yahoo Sports. She's a frequent guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sunaya, thanks very much for joining us, and enjoy tomorrow afternoon's semifinal game.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Sunaya. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I've been looking for a top six forward, especially a winger. Since the first month of the season, they're hard to come by, and we're finally in a position that we could find a guy that we feel can come in, help our forwards, give us more depth up front. He can play both wings comfortably. He's a right shot, likes to play the left side, but based on our injury situation, I would suspect he'll start on the right side with us until we get our full team back. But very pleased that we could make this addition today.
Pittsburgh Penguins general manager Jim Rutherford talking to the media yesterday after acquiring David Perron from the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for a first-round pick and Rob Klinkhammer. And I'll tell you what, if there's a better New Year's gift you can get than being traded from the Edmonton Oilers to the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'm not sure what it is. And David Perron probably is the happiest guy in the NHL today, going to make his Penguins debut tonight as the Penguins get back in action after the New Year. Your thoughts, I'll start with you, Richie, your thoughts on David Perron and the price of the first-round pick and Rob Klinkhammer?
You know, Drew, I think it's a logical trade for both sides. I heard Jeff O'Neill yesterday on Leafs Lunch out of Toronto say, you know, we should have a horn for a logical move by Craig McTavish because they're just so rare, and I think it's true. You know, this move makes sense for both sides. Sidney Crosby is 27 years old. He's going to be turning 20, I believe, in August, okay?
Yes, August 7th, in fact.
Okay,
8-7-87.
8-7-87.
Yes, so you know who else was born on August 7th,
yeah,
of course.
Some guy beside me, apparently.
That's right.
But
handsomer, yeah.
27 years old, okay? And Malkin, those guys are in their late 20s, going to be early 30s. There's a window here. And Jim Rutherford is identifying a window. He's got injuries, sure. They needed the depth anyways. He's identifying a window, and he's saying, okay, the first-round pick probably won't help me. A late first-round pick, even though it was a good draft, for 4 to 5 years. 4 to 5 years, sure, you want to build, and they have a lot of defense prospects in the system, defensive guys who can certainly play. It's their forwards where they're lacking a bit. The idea is, by the time those guys, that first-rounder helps your team, Crosby and Malkin are getting close to, you know,
early
33, 34,
yeah.
Right? So I like what they do here. They say, okay, we need a winger, we need a scoring winger. Jim Rutherford describes him there. I mean, he's a bigger guy than you think. Doesn't play the biggest style, really, but really good hands, really good wrist shot, good stick handler, likes to play the off wing, prefers it, but as Jim Rutherford said, can play both. Playing with skill, because he's a shooter more than anything. Playing with Malkin and Crosby, I mean, who else could you ask for? Whoever they put him with. Both great setup guys. Makes a ton of sense. From Edmonton's perspective, what the hell are you going to do with David Perron? 3.8 a year for the next 2 years. You add Teddy Purcell, who... not exactly the same player, but your right-handed shot, you know, Purcell's probably a little softer even, and
Purcell might be on his way out next also.
Well, maybe, but the idea is, like, you brought both guys in, and I always wondered, like, why? Like, the Perron move from the beginning was a great move, because Pjärvi, I never thought, had the hockey sense to do it. That move is a great move. Then you convert Perron into a first-round pick, great move. Perron is not going to help you. You're going to trade for, you trade him right now because he won't help you win anything. You trade him for a first-rounder. Now the question is, do you use that first-rounder, or are you going to package it to try and get a goalie? It gives you flexibility. So it makes sense from Edmonton's perspective, and it makes sense from Pittsburgh's perspective. You almost hope that teams in the league would make more of these trades because it's so logical.
As David Perron, has he come in and has he sort of played that James Neal role that they lost when they traded him for Hornqvist? How do you view the trade from Pittsburgh's perspective?
I think David Perron is a more versatile player than James Neal. And you got to keep in mind, too, for David Perron, you know, Richie mentions that he's got another year left on his contract, and I think that's very important
it
in
is.
This situation.
Right.
The Pittsburgh Penguins know he's not a rental player.
Sure.
He's a guy that will play this year, and they'll have him from next year. I wouldn't be surprised if all... we shouldn't jump ahead of ourselves, but, I mean, if they like the way he fits in, he might be a guy they signed to a 3 or 4 year deal. As Richie mentioned, you know, he's not... He's 26 years old. He's a guy that is really a lame duck with the Oilers,
yep.
But now he goes to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Richie mentions he can play both wings, and we're not sure if he's going to play with Sidney Crosby. Everybody has kind of penciled him in to be on the right wing with Pascal Dupuis out for the season. We don't know that yet. You know, they're going to have to figure out. Mike Johnston is going to have to figure out what works. He could play with Malkin. He could play with Crosby. They might even use him on the third line if they need to. But the most important thing is, and I agree with you, Richie, this trade makes a lot of sense for both teams. The Oilers are, as Eric Duhatchett called it, if you read his recent article in the Globe and Mail, they're with the rebuild within the rebuild. It's the second rebuild.
That's right.
So this isn't the final trade that they make. And, you know, David Perron is a guy also, you know, you got to keep in mind, too, he was second on the Oilers in scoring last year. He almost had 30 goals for the Oilers last year. And he's a guy that can snipe. He can set up plays. And he's also a guy that likes the gritty game. He's an agitator. And I think if you look at what the Pittsburgh Penguins have done since last year when they lost to the New York Rangers there in the second round and they couldn't score against Henrik Lundqvist, they weren't happy with the way the Rangers at times pushed them around physically. And that's one of the reasons why they went out and got Steve Downey, for example, a guy who's started to put it together a little bit. Sometimes he struggles with the discipline side of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the trade makes a lot of sense. Is this going to make the Pittsburgh Penguins a Stanley Cup guarantee champion? No, absolutely not. But it makes them better. It's worth spending the first-round pick. As
sure.
Richie mentioned, the Oilers are stockpiling draft picks. Maybe they'll use it in a deep draft. Maybe they'll use it to use a goalie, as Richie mentioned. But they know that they're going to get a top-five pick at the very minimum. So why not start moving away some of your assets when you know there's no chance that you're making the playoffs? You know that there's a pretty small chance you're making the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an Oilers team that is in... You know, as we talked about with Eric Duhatchett, I mean, this is a team. This is a team that didn't think they were going to be doing this year.
Right, but you're starting to do now what Buffalo did a couple years ago, where you realize that, you know, you just aren't good enough to compete, and it's time to cash in on your assets and give yourself the flexibility and give yourself the multiple first round picks. No, I mean, this is going to be a first round pick in the probably somewhere between 25 and 30. So it's not going to be a game-changing...
It's a deep draft, though.
I know it's a deep draft, but it's a game. It's not a game-changing first-round pick.
It's just a matter of when that pick will help the players they have now.
Of course.
It's a window here, guys. We're talking about the Crosby Malkin window. Everybody thinks it's endless. Well, it's not necessarily endless.
No. I mean, well, you're right. You're right. You know, a late first-round pick is not entering into the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup unless they find some sort of steal for 3 years where Crosby and Malkin are in their 30s at that point
right.
in time. And that's just, you know, that's not good enough.
And Perron's going to give you a score 20 goals at least 3 times in his career.
Yeah.
He's a shooter. And he's going to give you, he's going to compliment. I mean, these guys, you put Malkin and Crosby with other shooters who can get you 10 goals a year, they'll make him 20 goal scores. This guy's already, Perron almost scored 30 goals last year with Crosby and Malkin for a full season. He's going to score 35.
And and Richie, you got to keep in mind, too, and I know you're right, and you know, he obviously is going to bring offense. And you look at some of the lines, and I think, you know, you got to give Blake Como credit. He's done a good job there. And, you know, Bo Bennett, even though he's had injury problems, you put David Perron there, and you have a legitimate 20-goal guy. But also a guy that I think, I like the way he plays. He's a guy, I mentioned this before, but he's a guy that he can get on the nerves of players. He's a guy that has playoff experience with the St. Louis Blues. Not as much maybe as he'd like to have. The St. Louis Blues are perpetually knocked out in the first or second round. But he's a guy that has that experience. He's a veteran, but a younger veteran. I love the trade for both teams. I really do. I saw this trade, as Richie mentioned, why aren't more trades like this happening right. as opposed to some of these other trades or lack of trades, and you're kind of wondering, well, this would make sense to make this move. It makes you better in the short term and the long term.
Well, I just mentioned Teddy Purcell from the Oilers' perspective. He's in the exact same situation that David Perron is in. He's an unrestricted free agent in 2016. So, you know, you get him for another year, just like Perron's under contract.
You're not going to get a first rounder.
They basically acquired him for free.
Right, I know. And you're not getting a first rounder for him. But, you know, again, why are you holding on to him for another year? What's he doing for your team?
Was a Gagne for Purcell, basically, and Gagne was put for nothing.
That's right.
So well, also, and again, this might be the beginning of the fire sale, but, I mean,
should be.
They have to have some players
why?
For next year.
Why? Why hold on to him if somebody's...
Agree, well, no, I'm not saying... Add as many picks as you can.
Well, I'm not saying
but
necessarily...
This is not the hardest rebuild
I'm not saying
town,
necessarily like. Teddy Purcell. I'm saying that the Oilers aren't going to trade 10 guys before the trade deadline. They have to have some NHL players for next
There's
year.
There's no reason
you can't
to
put
trade...
out an entire team no. of 21-year-olds.
Right, but they get back a Klinghammer in this trade, and they claim Fraser off waivers. They could claim five guys off waivers as long as they have a roster. The point is like, this is the thing. Eventually, they're going to turn around Edmonton and McTavish or whoever it is going to get a bunch of credit. You still have a huge core there that's a lot harder to assemble than most other teams are going to deal with.
Sure. And, I mean, if you're trading Perron, you trade Purcell too, and if it only gets you a second-round pick or a third-round pick or whatever it is, a second and a third, I mean...
No, you're not going to get both.
I know you're not getting both, but, I mean, the prices always go crazy right around the
third,
trade deadline.
Probably.
Okay, you make the trade. There's no reason to hold on to them.
I think what you're seeing with the Edmonton Oilers is they're making trades now, and they don't want to duplicate what's happened in previous years with the trade deadline when you get less for some of these assets. I think getting a first-rounder...
Or they hold on to Alex Hemsky for 400 years or whatever.
Well, honestly, though, I don't think they're necessarily going to wait till March 1st or March 2nd or whatever it is to trade some of these guys. And, yeah, maybe Teddy Purcell gets moved. Maybe some other veteran guys get moved. But we've already seen some guys get moved. And the point I was trying to make is, I mean, they have such a young team already. I'm just saying don't expect every single guy on the Edmonton Oilers to get traded. I think some guys will move, and it might be Purcell. But, you know, you already have a young team with Hall, Nugent, Hopkins, and all these guys, and I don't expect any of those guys to get moved.
Well,
but
the aspect I also like about it from Pittsburgh's perspective is Malkin and Crosby are still primarily setup guys, and you're putting a scorer with them. You're putting a shooter. You know, now Perron likes that puck on a stick for a little bit longer than James Neal does. But he's still a scorer. He's still the shooter. I think it's a great move.
Let's go to break by playing one more clip from Jim Rutherford talking about the trade. This is clip number two, Jim Rutherford, on if there's more moves to come for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, it gets a little trickier now. We can still make moves, but any future moves we make, we would have to take somebody out of our lineup. And I like what the guys have done to this point. You know, everybody in different ways have contributed to where we are, and so we'll just watch the team to see what the needs are, and you know, if we feel we still have needs, we have lots of time to still add.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we discuss the New Jersey Devils and their new interesting goaltending coaching situation.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, I'm the only one who has the knowledge I have of what is going on, and it's a difficult one. It's certainly not something that you want to do, but when the decision had to be made, in my opinion, then you come up with the best alternative. And if there was a best alternative to have a certain person be the head coach, that probably would have been the priority. But right now, this is, in my opinion, the best approach at this time. It's not saying that either one of the coaches that we have here are not capable of doing that, but not at this time.
There's New Jersey Devils general manager and quasi-coach Lou Lamoriello talking about his decision to relieve Peter DeBoer of his duties as head coach on Boxing Day and replacing him with some sort of unwieldy three-headed monster of Lamoriello, Scott Stevens, and Adam Oates. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Ezzy, you're the big Devils fan of the three of us. Two-part question. One, how surprised were you when, you know, Lamoriello decided to make this move? And two, is this a viable solution where you have Scott Stevens working the defense the defensive side of the bench. You have Adam Oates working the offensive side of the bench, and you have Lou Lamoriello doing, I'm not really 100% sure what he's doing. Is this a viable solution for the Devils?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, I wasn't surprised that Pete DeBoer was let go by the New Jersey Devils. This has been a horrible year for the Devils. I didn't agree with the decision, and I think that Pete DeBoer is an excellent coach, and I think Pete DeBoer is going to be a coach in the NHL very soon, whether that's an assistant coach or a head coach. But not surprised, because look at the New Jersey Devils, and they didn't make the playoffs last year. And, you know, this year you have a situation where you've had some injury problems, but you've brought in guys like Mike Camilleri and Martin Havlat, veteran guys, to increase the scoring. But to me, that wasn't the problem, and it was the defense. And, you know, I've said this before, you know, I still think that there's enough offensive talent on that team to make this a competitive team. But watch the New Jersey Devils play, and you know, as you mentioned, you know, people who listen to the show know that I'm a big Devils fan. This team has very little flow to their game. It's a team that isn't particularly quick. I would say it just isn't quick. And it's a team that isn't particularly good on the penalty kill. And it's a team that can score goals, but they don't score enough goals. Corey Schneider was played a lot in the beginning of the season. By the way, I don't think that was a mistake at all by Pete DeBoer. Corey Schneider is your number one goalie. You don't have a very good backup, whether that's Scott Clemenson, a veteran, or Keith Kincaid, who's now up with the team. So I don't think that, by any stretch of the imagination, had anything to do with Pete DeBoer being fired. Corey Schneider wants to play. He's going to play, and he was pretty good, but maybe in hindsight, maybe you should have not started him as much. But to me, you know, to answer the second part of your question, what is Lou Lamoriello doing here? I mean, he didn't improve his team on the back end at all. He's playing too many rookies. And, you know, you like what you've seen out of Damon Severson, mm-hmm. even though he's injured now. But it's too young. Bryce Salvador and Zidlicky at their age are too slow. You can't have those guys as a part of your top pairing. And as far as the coaches go, you know, Scott Stevens was an assistant coach previously with the Devils, and he wasn't brought back this year. And Tommy Albeline was brought back in his place as the assistant coach.
But Stevens didn't want to come back, though, has he? Right?
Right. Yeah. And did that have anything to do with Pete DeBoer? We didn't hear it had anything to do with Pete DeBoer. But if he didn't want to be back as an assistant coach, how come now that Pete DeBoer is gone, is Scott Stevens now back and interested? Now, I don't want to speculate. It might have been personal reasons. It might have been professional reasons. But the point of Lou Lamoriello putting himself in a position where he's interim head coach, and he is interim head coach. He's not going to be the permanent head coach. But bringing Adam Oates, who was obviously with the Capitals last year, but bringing Oates and Stevens in, to me, it's an odd situation, because why aren't you appointing one of those two guys as your head coach? And to me, and we'll ask Tom Giulitti of the Bergen Record about that when he comes on, maybe get some clarification here. But to me, it's because Lou Lamoriello doesn't know who he wants to be the head coach.
Well, I have a question. And Lou Lamoriello's done a heck of a lot in the game, and he also had that Stanley Cup run. Kovalchuk was a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a question. When was the last time the New Jersey Devils developed a forward prospect? Adam Henrique, Travis Zajac, that's a few years now.
Yeah.
You look at that roster and tell me when the last time he developed a forward prospect was.
Parisi?
Yeah, but I mean, Parisi was on his second deal. He's a UFA. I mean, he played his 7 years in the league. I mean, that's,
I know,
what, 9 years ago now?
Well, you look at the Devils. I mean, just look at the Devils roster. It's not
so that goes,
I mean,
back to the that goes to the fundamental problem of Lou Lamoriello made his hit. And I watched that 94 game. The Rangers Devils game was on the other night. And I watched that game, and the Devils used to be a team that would develop talent and come throughout the roster. And when they made that run, as the Elias Sikora, they made the Guerin for Arna trade. They drafted Scotty Niedermeyer and Ken Danico, and they got Stevens as a compensation. The team had a flexibility about it. It was compiled. The talent was compiled in different ways. Look at this roster. Elias, old. Camilleri, old. Klo, old. Rutu's, I mean, he's not that old, but he plays old.
He's almost 32 at this point in time.
He's also
a lot of miles on him.
Yeah. Michael Ryder, older player. Jagr, obviously, 40-plus. Daniel Zubras has been around for a long time. He's a 35-plus deal. Marty Havlat. I mean, enough's enough. You have to either rebuild. You don't have to either rebuild. You have to rebuild. I like the pieces. See, that's the thing. Severson, as he mentions, I like his game. Jell and I like where he's coming from. You know, Larson, now that's still some questions there. But you have some guys, and Corey Schneider. You could do a rebuild here.
you could get some value for those players. Now, the problem is the amount of money. Like Ryan Clough's contract with all of his concussions, 4.85 for the next 3 years, untradeable.
Yeah.
Untradeable because of his concussions. Camilleri, $5 million per year. I don't know. Zajac, 5.75 for the next however many years through 2020-21, whatever it is.
10 points in 32 games for Zajac this season.
I mean, I know his injuries and stuff have been an issue, but he's never taken that step that he did a couple of years ago. Built on that. Maybe it was Zajac. Maybe it was Parise. Was a result of that. His success was a result of Parise, excuse me. I don't know. But, Ezzy, how many question marks are there here? So you put a coach, and I like Pete DeBoer. Pete DeBoer had that team playing a system I thought worked. Jaromir Jagr came out before he was fired in support of him. Yeah. If you watch that team on a structural basis, how he had them playing based on the talent level, I was actually quite impressed. I mean, he did this team to the Stanley Cup Finals a couple years ago. Again, Kovalchuk was there, different team a little bit.
I think that Stanley Cup Finals appearance, the one against the Kings, has provided a mirage for what really that this team should have started rebuild a number of years ago.
I don't
ago.
Disagree with that, but I think I think you're right, and I think that's a management's perspective, because Ezzy, from my perspective, that was a brilliant piece of work by Pete DeBoer. I mean, they go through, remember? They go and they beat Florida in a Game 7 overtime. I mean,
that's you right.
can on any which way. But they come in, Philly had just beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. Philly was a favorite, they beat Philly. Then they go and they play the Hudson rivals, New York Rangers. New York Rangers a favorite, they beat New York. Then they came down 3-0 to the Kings, and they made it 3-2, and they got killed in that sixth game. But the idea was, those teams that they were playing, and to your point, Drew, those teams they were playing were better than they were.
Yeah.
And they made that run, kind of similar to Calgary. Did they do what the Flames did here? 04, Calgary makes the run. 07 was 06, excuse me, when the Oilers make the run. Both those teams hung on too long to a one-shot deal, as opposed to saying, "Hey, we had success, and maybe it wasn't warranted."
Let me ask you this now, Ezzy. I mean, again, you know the Devils better than Richard or I do. Is it time to maybe for Lou Lamoriello to turn the reins of this team over to somebody else? A storied career as an executive in the NHL. Has his time passed now?
Well, it's a good question, and it's a question that was almost considered sacrilegious, really, in NHL circles because of what Lou Lamoriello has done. You know, you talk about 3 Stanley Cups,
yeah.
5 Stanley Cup appearances, and he has struggled with the management of this roster. You talk about the 2012 Stanley Cup run, the LA Kings' first ever Stanley Cup, and, you know, Pete DeBoer deserves a lot of credit for that. Marty Brodeur deserves a lot of credit for that. But since that Stanley Cup run, who have they lost? They've lost Ilya Kovalchuk. They've lost Zach Parise. They've lost David Clarkson. So, I mean, you're talking about how many goals are you talking about there? You're talking about a lot of goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this goes back to you losing Scott Gomez and losing all these players. Scott
Niedermeyer. They have him back.
Well, no, but, I mean, you know, Richie talks about the drafting, and David Conte is a guy who is drafted very well, not so much lately,
right.
You know, but if you're losing all of those guys, who's coming up through the pipeline? And you know,
losing them for nothing, is he too? Kovalchuk bails for nothing.
Exactly.
Parise goes UFA for nothing.
So you've lost those guys, and it's fine if you have guys to replace them. But, you know, I agree with Rich. There's some bad contracts there. Ryan Clough, you know, no offense to him.
He's had like 12 concussions.
It's a bad call. It's a lot of money to give a guy who, as you mentioned, has had injury problems. So, you know, you're in a position now where you have to rebuild. And, you know, you talked about the Edmonton Oilers and the New Jersey Devils are going to have to get what they can for some of these players. Another guy, you know, shocked to me that a guy gets a contract. A guy like Dania Zubras, you watch him play, shouldn't be in the NHL. And he's making, what, $4 million a year. So, you know, Jersey Devils have all types of holes throughout the roster.
He's 3.1. Subas is 3.1 for this year, next year, and he's a 35-plus contract. He retires. They have to pay him anyways.
They haven't drafted as well as they used to in the mid-90s, late 90s, early 2000s. That might be the curse of Adrian Foster, who they drafted and didn't ever get a sniff of the NHL. But guys,
Great reference.
Guys like Jacob Josephson, I mean, they have struggled to really contribute at the NHL level. You know, we talked about some of the defensemen draft picks, like Severson is a second rounder. Some of these other defensive prospects are looking good, but, you know, there's holes throughout the roster. They've never really developed a backup goaltender in a long time.
Yeah, good point.
And that's probably why Corey Schneider played the first 19, 20, whatever games it was at the beginning of the season. So, I mean, back to your original question, though. Lou Lamoriello has been the only GM, as you know, the Devils have ever had. And he has a lot of power. We know, you know, he's got a lot of Gary Bettman and all that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect Devils ownership to get rid of Lou Lamoriello, but you have to look at maybe some of the other I guess guys in there that are helping Lou Lamoriello, because we know Lou Lamoriello's kind of ran the show there for a long time, and he's been influential in USA Hockey and all of that. So, yeah, I don't think his job is in jeopardy because it's Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah.
I would say the same for a guy like Glenn Sather as well. Kind of some of these guys are...
But I think the difference is, and it's funny you mentioned Glenn Sather, Ezzy, because I think the difference between Sather and Lamoriello is that Lamoriello is more hands-on than Sather.
Sather is, I mean...
Jeff Gorton does a lot of the Rangers
stuff. Doesn't smoke
stuff.
As many cigars either.
Also, yeah. He says he only chews on them, though.
Oh, sure. Well, we'll believe that. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll tell you why it was a good week to be named Nick and still to come in the show. Tom Giulitti is going to join us to talk more about the Devils and their bizarre situation. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We got approached about a month ago, and we were just trying to figure out if it was a good time to do it. Obviously, I want to be a Panther for a long time, and I love it down here, so I wanted to get the process going and not have to worry about it. So it's good to have off my back, and we worked it out last night. So thankfully, I'll be here for another 6 more years, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's really fortunate. A lot of people have helped me along the way, a lot of family, friends, coaches, and just a pretty lucky guy to be able to have this opportunity.
That's Nick Bjugstad of the Florida Panthers signing a 6-year, $24.6 million contract earlier this week. Also signing this week, Nick Foligno, 6 years, $33 million contract with the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll talk about both those contracts this segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Andrew Norelli. Last time he's going to be in the city. Thus, two shows tonight here at Rumors. You can check them out. Tickets available. RumorsComedyClub.com. Gentlemen, let's start with the Nick Bjugstad contract. We just heard from him. 6-year deal in Florida, $24.6 million. Salary cap hit of $4.1 million each and every year. Was an RFA at the end of this season. Your thoughts on the Panthers giving him a 6-year contract?
That was a good deal for the Panthers. You know, I mean, Paul Edmonds and I were discussing this before the New Year's Eve game, and we were discussing the relevance of this contract to Scheifele, Mark Scheifele, which I want to talk about in a second. But in terms of the Florida Panthers' perspective, love this deal from a team perspective, because you get a guy who's pending RFA, so he's signing for 6 years, okay? So that he's signing for 4 years of RFA status,
yeah.
One of which he will have no arbitration,
right.
Three of which he would have arbitration, and then 2 years of UFA status, which he'd make a lot of money. I like Nick Bjugstad's game. I think he plays with great speed. He has a really good shot. He can create offense for himself. Right-handed shooting, scoring center. They're hard to come by. The size that he has. Again, I've said this before on the show.
6'6".
He reminds me of Blake Wheeler. Minnesota boys, he's a better scorer than Blake Wheeler. Not as good of a passer. But you look at his numbers. The numbers are very similar to Mark Scheifele's. But you could question, you know, even the talent that he's played with so far in that Florida Panthers team. They get him. The guy scored 14 goals this year, Drew. So he's on pace for about 25 to 30 goals this year. You score 30 goals in the National Hockey League at 22 years old, and you only sign for 4.1 for the next 6 years. To me, the team is getting great value. So I think this is a team-friendly deal, and the Panthers have smartly jumped at the opportunity to sign a guy like this long-term.
Ezzy?
Yeah, and Richie's 100% right, as usual. And, you know, for Dale Tallon, you know, he's looking at his team right now just 1 point out of the playoff picture. They've done a nice job here, and it's a very young team. But he's looking at this, and he's saying, why wouldn't I get Nick Bjugstad under contract right now on a long-term basis? And he does, and Richie, you're right. You're going to look at this and, you know, led the team in scoring last year, scored 20 goals. And he's leading the team in scoring right now, and he's part of that core going forward. And Aaron Ekblad, you know, just tied Ed Jovanovsky's rookie record for most points by a defenseman. It's not even halfway through the season.
Yeah.
You know, he might end up with 35 or 40 points before this is over. Certainly a Calder Trophy candidate right now, in my opinion. And he's a player that at times can And again, maybe people haven't seen him play a lot. You know, he was a good player for the University of Minnesota, first round pick, but you don't see Florida play a lot, and everyone was kind of just expecting Florida to not be really in the playoff picture right now. But, you know, he's a big part of it. He really is. And, you know, he'll probably, you know, pass his, you know, career mark that he set last year. And, you know, so it makes sense. And, you know, it's a cap hit that really, if you compare that cap hit, talking about like Ryan Clough making that type of money. You know, Nick Bjugstad is an up-and-coming star in the league. So, you know, it's a good contract for the Panthers, and you have to like what they're doing, you know, with the core of their team there. Alexander Barkov, he's still very young. And, you know, this is a team. Roberto Luongo has been excellent this year. He's a huge reason why they're in the playoff picture right now. We know that. So, yeah, Nick Bjugstad, you know, has a bright future ahead of him, and it makes sense. You know, Richie mentions that it's a team-friendly contract. How can you argue with that?
Well, you don't go to Arb this year, and he gets 30 goals. You're gonna give him something like what, 2.5-3 a year?
Sure.
And then you're gonna say go to arbitration. Well, arbitration is gonna be friendly to him. What's it gonna get him up to? Maybe 4. I mean, assuming he has similar success over the course of the deal, value is with the team. Now, I understand as a young player, you want security. If you're talking straight dollars, I think it's a team-friendly deal. But I realize there's personal aspects to these contracts as well. Now, if you look at Mark Scheifele,
that's what I was gonna ask you.
I mean, their points per games are very similar. I
smell a future article coming.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, possibly, yes. But I
also smell pierogi pizza.
100, you know, so if you want to look...
That's your cologne, though.
Yeah. Mark Scheifele's put 112 games, okay, in the National Hockey League. And Nick Bjugstad has put 123, okay?
Pretty much a wash.
Now, Bjugstad is a better goal scorer than Scheifele. Scheifele is a better passer than Bjugstad, in my opinion. Scheifele's a good playmaker. So... Scheifele's not an RFA until after next season, right? So that contract negotiation is coming up after next season because he played under 10 games the first 2 years in the National Hockey League. So I think if you're the Jets, you have another year here of Scheifele to see what he does and the role he's playing. I think Bjugstad, Scheifele plays has had more of a power play opportunity than Bjugstad, I think, played with better wingers, frankly. If I'm the Jets, I'm using that Bjugstad as, hey, I'm not paying you more than 4.1 a year over a 6-year deal. And if anything, I think I might say, you know, the numbers might be very similar. But if goals are worth more than assists, if you value the goal scoring more than the playmaking, I'm not paying you that much even. You're a little bit lower. Now, depending on the market, state taxes, obviously, in Florida low and the taxes here and all that stuff, you probably could say, okay, maybe I'll give you that contract. But even that contract for the Jets is a fit. Because no $4.1 million contract is going to hurt you. Unless you have 10 of them, like some of the other teams that are...
Like the Devils.
Right, so that idea. So I think if you're the Jets, you really like this contract. And I almost wonder how soon the Jets want to jump into this conversation with Scheifele. And he seems to like it in Winnipeg. And one thing about Scheifele that I really do like, the kid works hard. I mean, he is at practice early. He stays late. He's working on his game all the time. So certainly expect him to improve over time, never mind the fact that he's getting older right now.
And, you know, Foligno's different because he's older, but Richie, how much of...
Yeah, that one's different.
How much of avoiding the bridge contract in regards to Bjugstad is this? I mean, the bridge contract hasn't worked out for teams. And I think that's part of this. I think that's something that you've seen a lot of players do. They play their 3 years. They don't want to eat up all of the unrestricted free agency years. And this doesn't do that with Bjugstad, but I think, you know, Ryan O'Reilly is a good example.
Sure.
You've seen other players that they sign the bridge contract, and then the team has to pay them more money than maybe they'd like to.
Well, let's talk about the Nick Foligno contract. Nick Foligno re-signs in Columbus. 6 years, $33 million for him. Salary cap hit of $5.5 million a year. He was set to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end. So far, he's got 32 points in 34 games played this year, 17 goals and 15 assists. Your thoughts on the Foligno contract?
I mean, Nick Foligno's been great this year. I mean, he really has been in an injury-ravaged season. He's been great. He's
injury-ravaged for the Blue Jackets.
He's probably the only guy who's been healthy. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, Drew. And I think, you know, you're looking at a guy who I kind of thought was a second, third-line tweener, really. Could play in your top six if you needed him to. Could play your top nine. And in any event, he'd be a productive forward. See, I think this is a high contract here, guys. I think you're going a little bit too high. Because you look at Nick Foligno's career. He's never scored more than 18 goals. Now, he's going to score 18 goals. He's got 17 right now in 34 games, right? Now he's shooting. He's get every 1 in 5 shots is going in the net, so that'll eventually calm down. Although he scored at a high clip last year. This is the thing.
He's going to get 25 this year minimum.
Okay, sure, he'll get 25.
Right.
I like the Dubinsky contract in that what he, you know, what he sets out for the organization, personifies a working, a hardworking, two-way guy who can do a lot of things. But you can't, to me, you can't have two of those contracts on the books. You can't have Dubinsky for 5.85, and you can't have Foligno for 5.5. So that's $11 million, a little bit more than that. You're spending on two guys who, in really good years, might get you a combined 80 points sometimes. That's a lot of money, $11 million for 80 points. So I don't love the Foligno contract. I think that's an overpay by a smart GM in Jarmo Kekäläinen, and I appreciate what he's trying to do there. And I know the Nathan Horton contract, if it ends up on LTIR, on long-term injury reserve, might give them a break, and he can kind of fill a void, even though he's a left winger and Horton's a right winger. I just think they're paying a little bit too much for a guy who's not a natural scorer.
Well, let's hear from Jarmo Kekäläinen. Clip number 11, it was a priority for him, he says, for the Blue Jackets to sign Nick Foligno.
It was obviously a priority for our team and something that we took very seriously right from the start and wanted to get it done and finally did. And we're very happy. Very happy about that, and you know, we want players that want to be Blue Jackets, and just like Brandon Dubinsky, Nick Foligno pretty much led us to believe that he wants to stay, and he told me, I had a conversation with him this morning before we agreed, he told me he wants to stay here, he wants to win with us.
Ezzy, your thoughts on Kekäläinen, your thoughts on this contract?
My thoughts on Kekäläinen.
Your thoughts on his contract, well, more so.
Well, and I agree with Richie. You might be overpaying Nick Foligno a lot. He's a player that I've always liked, and I thought he was underrated in Ottawa. I think, you know, for a late first-round pick, and he came in, and as Richie mentioned, he's not a guy that's ever had a 30-goal season. He might get there this year, but he's a guy...
Not a guy that's ever had a 20-goal season.
Yeah, and I think his career high is 19, if I'm not mistaken, and it'll be set this year. But
18,
you know,
last year. Yeah.
18. So, you know... He's a guy that, you know, he got the big goal versus the Pittsburgh Penguins last year in the first round in overtime, if you remember. And he's a guy that plays, can play a physical game. He's good defensively. So, you know, contract aside, as far as the number goes, I think the years make sense because he's been a big part of this team. And I think, you know, Richie mentioned that there might be some issues with contracts because you've got Dubinsky there and you're going to have, you know, the Ryan Johansson factor as well, Rich, when you factor all how much all of these guys make, because Ryan Johansson's younger and the cap hit will be higher. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it makes sense to me because he's a big part of the reason why they were almost successful in getting out of the first round last year. So he's a player I've always liked, and I thought he struggled at times and didn't get as much credit as he deserved in Ottawa. But, you know, again, when you look at some of the contracts and some of the guys that overpaid, I don't think it's uncommon for that. But I agree with Rich. I think maybe 6 years, it's a lot of money.
His character's off the charts. I mean, the guy's going to be a great guy in the room. You know what you're going to get from him. I just concern that you kind of have a blue situation. I know they're trying to kind of replicate what they had in St. Louis, that being Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson, former Blues executives. You need to have, you know, Ryan Johansson's obviously a start. You need to have guys up there with him. And I worry that if you spend so much money on your character guys, your second, third line kind of guys, you don't necessarily have enough money at the end of the day to get those guys at the top. And that would be my concern. And you got Ryan Murray coming up and Johansson coming up in a couple of years. Both those contracts need to get done. Now, Murray hasn't played enough to garner a huge deal. But if he does have a huge year next year,
sure,
that could change things.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Ultimate Game Day Experience 3 grand prize winner Brian Foy, Winnipeg Jets Game Day here on TSN 1290. When we come back, Tom Giulitti from the Record newspaper in New Jersey is going to join us.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online at tsn1290.ca. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place. Reminder that following us, of course, Hustler and Lawless, they'll take you for 2 hours of pregame talk, and then Rick Ralph and the Jacuzzi Hot Tubs of Manitoba pregame show will lead you in to the puck drop between the Jets
Leafs.
I heard Rick yesterday interviewing Adam Wozny, and he was saying that they were going to, well, he didn't say this, but I was assuming they're going to do the show from a jacuzzi.
That makes sense. Yeah, that would be good. I think that's a good way to sort of activate your sponsorship for the Jacuzzi Hot Tubs of Manitoba people. In fact, I'm willing to put this out there now. I think, you know, we're willing to do our show from a hot tub too.
I don't want to be anywhere near maybe a hot tub time machine, Drew, but...
Anyways, wow. Welcome back to the show. Tom Giuliti unable to join us. There's an ice storm apparently in New Jersey right now, and he's driving, so we thought it'd probably be best that he concentrate on the road rather than concentrate on talking to us about the Devils coaching situation, which is probably almost as treacherous as the ice storm is when you really think about it. Just give us an opportunity to reset a couple things from earlier in the program. First of all, just announced by Team Canada head coach Benoit Groulx, it is going to be Zach Fucali in net for Team Canada tomorrow against Slovakia. Yeah,
that's a have to. You can't flip goalies in the semifinals. I mean, that would be crazy. You create a controversy for no reason. Fucali's been through it, and no slight on Eric Comrie, but you ride the guy who brought you there last year, and he's going to bring you there this year.
That's right. And I mean, frankly, it doesn't matter who's in net for Canada against
tonight
Slovakia.
Tonight especially, yeah.
Or tomorrow night, rather. It really shouldn't matter whatsoever. Yeah. And then you look at the Leafs and the Jets game this evening at MTS Center. The Leafs haven't had an availability yet because they flew in from St. Paul last night. So we're expecting it's going to be James Reimer because Bernier went last night in Minnesota. And give it to the local boy, the Morwena, Manitoba, obviously born and raised in Morwena. So expect to be Reimer in net for the Leafs. Hasn't had a great deal of success this year. Hasn't really been good at all this year. Hasn't had a lot of success here at MTS Center before either. See if the Jets are able to take advantage of that in any way.
He's had his moments. Drew, times where he's stolen games for them. But it's tough. Again, we've talked about how difficult it is for him to play with that defense. And Randy Carlisle's going to get his guy in there, the Manitoba boy. And Carlisle's going to speak to the press at 3:30 here. So I'm sure he'll have a quote or two. He's always a notable quote.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a homecoming for Randy Carlisle always, although that's, it's been a few times now, so there's not as much attention paid to that. With the Leafs coming in the back-to-back, and the travel's not a huge issue, I think the lack of depth, we've talked about this, but the lack of depth that the Leafs have now is going to tax their lower lines a bit, the third, fourth lines, playing back-to-back nights and playing more minutes. I don't think the issue... Their horses play so much. I mean, the guys at the top of the end of the lineup, Ezzy, they'll play so much that it's old hat. It's the lower guys who don't play that much. You get to play more and then play back-to-back nights. The problem I have, the concern I have from the Jets' perspective is the Jets don't have the depth lines to take advantage of that problem. So I'm not sure how much of an advantage that will be for Winnipeg.
Yeah, and on the goaltending front, you can easily look at James Reimer's numbers, and they haven't been good, and that's why there was some speculation that Jonathan Bernier might play back-to-back nights, and he didn't have the most difficult night against the Minnesota Wild last night. They didn't win, but it's not like he faced 50 shots or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it was a quiet night for him. 50 shots would be a quiet night for him when he's as a Leafs goalie.
Right, but the expectation is that, as you mentioned, Drew, because James Reimer is a local provincial boy from Morwena, Manitoba, that he'll get the start here. And, I think there was some talk that, he might not be back this year, but I think, he's a guy that has proven that he can be good, and, the Leafs have had all types of problems on defense, so goals against average, as we've said many times before, that's a team stat. It's reflective of how the team's playing, and that's why, the Jets' defense, even despite the injuries, they deserve to be credited for the way they've played in front of Michael Hutchinson, and they deserve some of the credit for the fact that his goals against is under two. So, Reimer's going to play tonight, probably. As you said, it's not confirmed, but, the Jets, only because of the fact that they haven't been getting as much secondary scoring, They know this. They can't take the Leafs lightly. They have guys that can score that aren't just on the first line. We talked about it. Mike Santarelli can score. Guy that played a little cup of coffee with the Winnipeg Jets a few years back. So
he's played well. Yeah, he's played very well.
And he's played well. So, I mean, this is a situation where the Jets have to get back on track here. They had a bad game against the Islanders, one of probably their worst games in recent memory. Took a lot of penalties. Had some turnovers, weren't very good defensively from the top to bottom. I mean, with the exception of the Ladd line, obviously he got the two goals, and that was one of the top lines. I mean, they got to get back on track here. You've got San Jose coming up on Monday. That's not going to be an easy game. And then you're going out on the road, some tough games coming up against the Kings and Ducks. The Coyotes is probably the easiest one on that road trip.
But this schedule's only getting harder, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only getting harder, Richie. Yeah. This push to the All-Star break – which is, what, around January 24th, 25th, that weekend. This push is really important. The Jets don't want to give up points here and fall out of a playoff spot. They've been in a playoff spot here now for over a month, and they want to stay there.
And you talk. Sorry to interrupt there, Drew, but you talk about the All-Star break. It's interesting that you did, because Paul Maurice talked about that in the presser a couple of days ago. Talks about 7-11 coming up. Talks about the All-Star break. You can see now what he's working with. He's saying to these guys, hey, get us through that time period. Get us to the All-Star break. We'll get some horses back, and we'll be okay. So he's going, you know, he's not saying this is going to be indefinite.
Yeah.
Right? So, that, I mean, that's, I think, again, Paul Maurice has done a masterful job here this year in terms of his coaching. So, you have to, you know, if you're a Jets fan, you have to trust that's the right method to take here. But in terms of taking a team lightly, well, you're talking about the next two teams have the same amount of points as you do. So, certainly not. You know, different styles. Joe Thornton not playing for the Sharks tonight.
I was going to mention that, yeah.
But who knows what happens on Monday. But their top-end talent's scary as well. I mean, the Sharks coming in here, again, they've kind of changed the complexion of their team a bit with the trade of Jason Demers for Brendan Dillon. You know, Dillon's played, had some time there with Brent Burns. You got Vlasic now and Braun. You got some solid. I don't love their bottom pairings. I don't love their bottom lines. I don't love their goaltending either. So I don't think that's a great team. I think that's a really good team that can certainly beat any team in the league. But you can't take the Sharks lightly by any means. And the Leafs, again, the past two teams that have beat you have been teams that are really good in transition with speed. And teams that generally are good in transition are good with speed. That's another team that you're getting tonight. So you're seasoned. You're used to it now. Don't say, through the Jets, you can't say, oh, this is a surprise to us, the style of play we're getting here. Now they're not as structured as Minnesota. Islanders were a little bit less structured, but more talented. The Leafs are less structured and less talented, but still talented.
It really, I think, for the Jets to succeed tonight, I think it comes down to being able to... You're not going to shut down Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, and Kessel. I mean, to keep them completely off the score sheet is a really impressive feat, and especially with the defense the Jets are putting out there tonight.
Right.
But if you can minimize them and not get beat by then the weaker second, third, and fourth lines, which are pretty injury-riddled right now, no Kadri for the Leafs, no Peter Holland, no Joffrey Leupel. So you're talking about not getting beat by guys like Daniel Winnick, Mike Santorelli, who, as he mentioned, is having a very nice year. You know, Clarkson, a little bit of a bounce-back season just because he couldn't be as bad as he was last year. Komarov, you not getting beat by those guys and, you know, giving up your two goals to JVR, Bozak, and Kessel, you give up a couple goals to those guys, but you handle everybody else, you're probably going to win this game.
Well, that's what kills you against Minnesota and against Islanders is that, now, the Islanders' third line is a very talented third line. We documented that in the first hour, but you're giving up a couple goals to the Islanders, the three goals went to the Islanders' third line, if it was, I think, three goals.
Yeah.
And then to the Minnesota, you're giving up goals to the Brodziak, Sutter, and Carter line. So, I mean,
I know
that's a depth defense issue again. So we will see.
You're right. Absolutely, we will see. And it'll be interesting to see how the Jets then try and take advantage. And we talked about it earlier in the show, the Jets' second line going up against that second pairing for the Leafs. Sort of being a key matchup in
to
that.
To me, that's the key to the game because the top lines have both been good. How did the Jets, depth-wise, after that second line is a huge drop-off, but they have an advantage second line versus Leafs second line. How do they take advantage of that tonight? And that will be the key for me.
Yeah. Ezzy, from you too, that's what you're looking at?
Yeah, that's a key matchup for the Winnipeg Jets against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And as I mentioned during the first hour, stay out of the penalty box, play a simple game, reduce the turnovers that have been a problem against the Wild and the Islanders here at home and get back on track and winning at home.
Absolutely. The game, of course, 6 p.m. puck drop. You can hear it live on TSN 1290. Paul Edmonds, Shane Knighty, and Dennis Bayak, the hardest working man in show business, returning from the World Juniors in time to call the game here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll do rapid fire, and then we'll wrap the show and turn it over to Hustler and Lawless. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Out-of-town scoreboard update, it appears as though it's a final in Boston. The Bruins fall at the hands of the Ottawa Senators, 3-2 in overtime. Senators getting a big win. Kyle Turris opening the scoring for the Senators. Torrey Krug answering for the Bruins.
Marchand for the Bruins. Mike Hoffman with, looks like 4 minutes to go in the game, ties it up. And then Bobby Ryan, 45 seconds into overtime, wins it for the Senators. A nice win for that team. Really not in the playoff race, but they might think they are. Bruins sort of continuing to scuffle. They lost on New Year's Eve at home to the Leafs in a shootout.
Drew, they're not out of the play. I mean, the Rangers have sure been firing on all cylinders here, 9-1 their last 10. But the Senators are creeping up, and Bobby Ryan obviously been very good lately. Mike Hoffman is a guy people in Winnipeg have seen, I think, on two occasions now. Very talented, very fast, good hands. If he can thicken up a bit, and he's already been an impact player, but he can become even more of an impact player.
Yeah, so nice win for the Senators against the Bruins today, this afternoon in Boston. One final segment for you on this Saturday afternoon. You know it, you love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
According to published reports, the Oilers are set to return Leon Draisaitl to Prince Albert of the WHL. The third overall pick last year has 9 points in 37 games this season. In your opinion, will there be any long-term ramifications to Draisaitl's career because of the way the Oilers have mishandled him this season?
Well, I mean, there's two things here. I think the report is that he's going back to Prince Albert, then to be traded to Kelowna.
That's right. So he's going to play for a contender. Yes.
That's where Josh Morrissey is, and they're making a run here. You burn a year of his entry-level deal, but you don't burn, believe, because it's under 40 games, you won't burn a year towards his free agency.
That's right.
Still mismanaged, putting a guy in a position in Draisaitl. We talked to Dave Jamieson in Edmonton, TSN Edmonton, about this ridiculous decision to keep him, playing him in a second-line center role when you knew you weren't going to make the playoffs and he was going to be in a losing environment. So it's a mismanaged year. You've cost yourself money in terms of value because Draisaitl is a good player. This is to me, is a metaphor for everything that's wrong with the Edmonton Oilers. This whole decision, and then he misses the World Juniors, too. I mean, who's making the decisions there?
Right, Richie, and Germany wasn't a team that had anybody of Leon Draisaitl's caliber,
right.
So they mismanaged the situation, as you said. And
wouldn't have lost any more there than you would have with the Oilers.
Sure. So, I mean, they should have probably sent him back earlier in the season. I didn't really have a problem with Draisaitl starting with the Oilers at the beginning of the year, but they struggled so much that it didn't really make sense. So
right.
I don't think it'll have long-term ramifications. I think it's easy to look at this in the short term in a vacuum and say that, you know, this is going to somehow affect his development. But I think really it's important for him to go back to junior, dominate, and, you know, be part of the young future next year.
On December 16th, Nashville Predators general manager David Poile recorded his 1,171st win as a general manager, moving all alone into second place behind only Glenn Sather. Does David Poile get the credit he deserves, one? And two, does he eventually belong in the Hockey Hall of Fame?
I think he certainly belongs in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Comes from a storied history. His dad is Bud Poile. He's done he's with the Washington Capitals, making the run. In the 90s there, the Rod Langway trade. I mean, he's made some great moves in Nashville and the way he's built that team. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's five cups behind Glenn Sather, so let's not get crazy there. And he hasn't won a cup. So I think he's a Hall of Famer for the sustained success he's had. But I do not think he's in the same class as some of the top general managers in the history of the game.
Yeah, I think it's a good water cooler debate to have. David Poile has had success with the Nashville Predators, and he's had success with USA Hockey as well. And he's done a great job turning that team around. The Predators are a contender in the West now. So I think, you know, Richie mentions, you know, he hasn't won the Cup yet, and he hasn't had maybe some of the long-term success like, you know, Lou Lamoriello or Glenn Sather or some of these other guys. But I think he's definitely had a huge impact on hockey,
yeah,
and he's a great manager.
Yeah.
So far during this 2014-15 NHL season, the Los Angeles Kings, the defending Stanley Cup champions, have lost to the Carolina Hurricanes, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Edmonton Oilers. Which of those losses is worst in your mind?
It's a good question. I mean, they can't win on the road either. That's been a huge problem. But I think the Oilers, just by how unstructured their game is, I mean, Carolina with Bill Peters and Buffalo with Ted Nolan. I mean, Ted Nolan's time, his team sometimes unstructured, but the idea is that Edmonton's been just such, like, Buffalo and Carolina expected to be this bad. I don't think the Oilers expected to be this bad, and there's been so much turmoil, and all three of those defenses are terrible. I think Edmonton's the worst loss there.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Rich. I'm going to say the Edmonton Oilers because they were able to come back and tie it, and just because the Oilers of recent
memory have had such a tough time, so I'll say Edmonton.
Guess which NHL player said the following on December 23rd, right before the start of the NHL's Christmas break. And I quote, "A break? I don't believe in this. You can't have a break, and after 3 days with the holidays and without a practice, are we going to be the best team in hockey? I don't believe that. I believe in hard work, but I'm different."
Yeah, and I read this in the show plan. I wasn't sure what to think. Is that Jonathan Taves?
Nope. Good guess. Not Jonathan Taves.
Huh?
Is he?
Taylor Hall?
Nope. Taylor Hall. Come on. Give me a break there. Give me a real guess. You should get this one. It's right up your alley.
Not sure, Drew.
Jaromir Jagr.
Really?
Jaromir Jagr. Obviously, wow. At the age of about 412 at this point in time,
well,
still shows you that he's got what it takes.
He was the best player to play in Winnipeg when the Devils were here.
Yeah.
For that team. It's incredible. And I watched him play a couple days later in Alberta. Best player there, too. So, I mean, work ethic-wise, you're not going to beat Jaromir Jagr.
As we've obviously come to the end of 2014,
yes.
For the calendar year, who was the Winnipeg Jets MVP?
Well, Drew, that's an interesting question because I think it changed kind of throughout the year. I mean, the MVP of the team, most valuable player, that because it's the definition that gets me. You know how I feel about Jacob Trouba and his emergence and his importance to this team. But some of those first liners have been really important in terms of changing the way and buying in to the coach and buying into the style of play. So I might actually have to say Blake Wheeler, but Trouba is a close second.
I'll say Dustin Byfuglien. I think, the fact that you have a guy like Dustin Byfuglien who mid-season can go from forward and go back on D, it's a luxury that a lot of teams don't have, and he's continued his very strong play this year, not just offensively, but he's been a really good leader on this team, and he's been a good role model for Ben Chiarot, and to go from forward and become the number one D pairing for an NHL team is not something that you see very often, so I'm going to say Buff.
Last rapid fire question before you go to cheers and jeers. Again, for the calendar year 2014, yeah. Which one NHL player, quote-unquote, won 2014?
Well, I think Drew Doughty did. I mean, you look at Drew Doughty and what he did for the LA Kings and their run to the Cup, and I think you look at Drew Doughty and the dominant force he was in the Olympics. You could argue he's the best player in the world, and that's Crosby included. Drew Doughty, for me, was the best player in 2014.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with Drew Doughty. Not many guys have won Olympic gold and the Stanley Cup in the same year. So, I'm going to have to go with Rich on that one.
Drew Doughty winning 2014. Let's wrap the show with cheers and jeers. Richie, we'll start it off with
you. Okay, yeah, cheers and jeers. Well, I'm waiting for that bumper now. the cheers and jeers... I'm going to kind of throw a curveball to you two guys here. And I watched this with Ezzy. Maybe it was because the company I kept during the game was so good. I thought the Winter Classic this year was pretty good. The quality of play was very good.
Yeah.
Maybe because it was such good weather and the ice conditions were excellent. But I thought the back and forth, the passion and Ovechkin and Taves there with the star power, I had a question. You guys know I don't love the Winter Classic. I thought this year was a pretty successful one.
Ezzy?
I'll cheer Eric Fehr. The guy, when he played for the Winnipeg Jets, didn't have a lot of goals. He's got 3 goals now in the Winter Classic. And what does he have, 9 or 10 goals now for the Washington Capitals? So, big credit to him. A lot of people thought at 29 years old, 28 years old, he didn't have it left, and he's put a nice season together for the Capitals.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer both Sheldon Kennedy and Bob Cole, both of whom named recipients of the Order of Canada earlier this week. Both obviously Bob Cole, his career as a broadcaster in hockey, and of course Sheldon Kennedy with his work on child abuse and making it more aware.
Absolutely.
And bringing it out of the shadows. Both well-deserving to be named to the Order of Canada. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guest Jonas Siegel from TSN 1050 and Sunaya Sapurji from Yahoo Sports. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Also available on tsn1290.ca. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, and the Linden Market Dental Center. Follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com. For producer Jesse on site here at Boston Pizza, producer Alex and producer Remus back at the studio, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.